Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. August 30th is International Whale Shark Day, and I have the perfect guest for the occasion. Marine biologist Sally Ann Hunter is author of Transfigured Sea, which advocates for environmental protection. Her book, written as a novel, is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Sally Ann Hunter, go to sallyannhunter.com and follow her on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and X. And Sally, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here.
And you're all the way in Australia, and I'm in the United States, so it's across an ocean or two. To say the least. So before we talk about the book itself, give us a little bit about your background as a marine biologist.
Oh, well, I was studying English literature at university, and David Attenborough came on television for the first time. He's a naturalist in the United Kingdom, works for the BBC, and does a lot of films about nature. Well, this was his first one. It was called Life on Earth. And it was just really inspiring, all about natural systems, natural creatures. And I fell in love with it. I was really inspired. So I changed and decided to study biology. And I ended up with a science degree. And then I did a master's degree in environmental studies, because I think the more you know about something, the more you love it. And the more you love it, the more you want to protect it. So by studying environmental studies, I learned how to protect the environment that I love.
And when you were studying the subject, did it get you out into the field, as we call the field, but the ocean in essence?
Oh, absolutely. I think the edge of the sea is the most fascinating place of all, because it cannot be delineated because it's always moving.
Mm-hmm.
But we went down to a place called Hallett Cove in South Australia, and there's rocky platforms at the edge of the sea. And our charismatic teacher would pick up rocks and find a beautiful organism underneath. And it was so exciting and wonderful, and I just loved it. And that's when I really fell in love with all those different organisms that you get near the coast, and especially in coral reefs. Those organisms are supposed to be the first ones that evolved, and we are all descended from them, but they're the simplest organisms of all.
Do you ever think we'll understand truly the magic of the sea?
Oh, yes, definitely. The sea is a whisper of emotion and a memory of intuition. That's from Transfigured Sea. The sea is a dream. And I'll just read you a little bit from the book, if I may.
Sure.
About the sea being a dream. Are dreams less real because they are temporary? Or are fleeting, moving, changing things examples of their own kind of reality, a different speed, like the sea, the sand, everything at the coast, which is moved by tides, currents, waves, and winds. The sea is a dream.
So it sounds
that's on that.
Go ahead.
The first page of the book.
So how did you meld the scientific approach to biology, marine biology, and particularly in the environment, with what you end up writing about? We'll talk about your novel in a moment or two, but how did you meld that with the clear emotional connection you have with the ocean and the sea?
Well, my book is quite poetic. It's got poems in it, but even the prose is quite poetic.
But that's my point. How did you end up combining your scientific background and study with how you approached it in the book? That's my question.
I'm not sure how I did it. It just happened. It's probably all subconscious. I think the book came out of my subconscious, really. It wasn't planned.
How much of the book? Go ahead. Oh, go ahead. We have a slight delay. Go ahead.
The book is about two women who live in the sea, and they travel around to explore all the different ecosystems in the ocean. And at the same time, they're exploring their own inner makeups. So personal growth is involved.
And do you think that the ocean in real life, as well as in your novel, helps to find the inner you, that the ocean helps to find the inner you because of the nature of the sea?
Oh, I think so. If you, once I was standing on an island, on the edge of the island on some rocks, and there was just a small area confined by rocks, but the waves were coming in with quite a lot of force and causing a lot of turbulence. And that just reminded me of some turbulence inside, in my subconscious. And I didn't want to face it. So I didn't like the ocean at that point. But, of course, there are other times when I love it, when, like Laura, one of the characters in the book, she is the sea sprite's mother. And when she looks at the sea, the mirrors in her heart open. It's like sunlight coming on the surface of the sea, the way it glitters and shines. And she felt that within her own heart. So that was a connection.
Could you have written this book 20 years ago?
No, probably not.
And why?
Because, I started off with a short story with Laura and Daphne on the coast, on the beach. And then I turned that short story into a novel. I did a course with South Australian Writers Centre. It was called Manuscript Incubator in 2017. And it was about writing a novel, how to go about it. So that helped me to change my short story into a longer book. And yes, I have a lot in my book about the sea creatures, which I suppose you would say is scientific. But those sea creatures, in their form or shape or behavior, often parallel the behavior of the women.
But I think the reason I asked you about whether you could have written it 20 years ago, not from the point of view of learning how to convert a short story into a novel, but more in terms of your sense of the sea and your sense of where your subconscious was going to write it.
Yes, you're right. Well, yes, I think events in my life did play an important part. But I don't want to talk about them publicly.
Mm-hmm.
But
they did have an impact on you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they did. Relationships with peers, and relationships with my mother. All those things, and most of the people in the book are based on people I know. But for example, my mother in the book is nothing like my mother in real life, nothing like her at all. But she is like somebody else that I know.
Mm-hmm.
I think writers do this, take bits and pieces from all over the place and mix them up.
Well, it's a good way to avoid getting sued if you have a little bit more of a fictional approach to various characters, and you can still talk about those characters, but they're assigned to other people in the book. What about the sea creatures, in the sense that did you incorporate your knowledge of the sea and sea creatures? And in the opening, we talked about whale shark and being International Whale Shark Day. What is it about whale sharks that people may or may not understand that you, from your background, understand?
Well, whale sharks are not dangerous to humans. They are sharks, but they are filter feeders, which means they have a lot of teeth, and they filter the ocean water, and they take out the plankton, the tiny little plankton, and other tiny morsels of organic matter. And they eat them, and they don't eat anything big because it couldn't pass that filter.
Such as a human, yes.
That's right.
Yes, nothing too big. So now from what I understand, there is more than 400 species of sharks. And I guess you could say a whale shark is not dangerous to humans, but at the same time, if you're in the ocean and you see a shark, I don't think you're going to go through your memory of catalog of all the different species of shark and figure that, oh yeah, this one's friendly, I'll come up and say hello, as opposed to going thinking I'm going to go a little bit away from this shark regardless of whether he's harmless or not. That's what I would think the normal human response would be.
Yes, but whale sharks are quite distinctive. They're quite different from other sharks. For one thing, they're enormous. They have the weight of about 3 elephants for one whale shark.
Whoa, that's a lot.
Yes, well, and they can be up to 21 meters long.
Well, so I would think just the weight alone would be, you don't want to be in the immediate vicinity just because you might get hit accidentally or the waves created by that kind of weight.
That's so right. And they have on their underbelly, they have a distinctive pattern of spots and stripes. And every whale shark is different from every other whale shark because of these patterns.
I would think, though, that I would not venture to check the underbelly of this particular shark to see if those markings are there. I would head for the shore. But I want to go back to something you said earlier. You talked about the edge of the sea. Now, the way I'm understanding it, and I may be totally wrong because I am not a biologist, but when you say the edge of the sea, are you referring to the shoreline or are you referring to something else?
Oh, well, the shoreline is part of it. And okay. you have waves come in, of course,
right,
and tide. And you have currents that go parallel to the coast sometimes. You have the wind, and the wind can break down rocks and cliffs. Then you also have the base of the ocean floor, which may move because of sediment load. You have tectonic plate margins warping and continents moving. You have glaciers melting or freezing. And so all these things impact on the position of any edge, which is always changing. The edge of the sea is a liminal area of its own. It can incorporate sandy beaches, cliffs, rocky areas, mangroves, estuaries, etc. I particularly like estuaries. I did my master's degree on one. It's a combination of salt water and fresh water. So it's neither the ocean nor a river, but in between.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's in that in-between area that magic happens. We might know that in our own lives. The in-between, not quite spiritual, not quite physical, but magical.
And that's the thing I find interesting, that your background is in science, and yet at the same time you recognize the magic of parts of the ocean, and you're going to translate that somewhat into your novel, which we'll get back to in a moment. But it's fascinating to me that you have that background. You are fascinated by it. You learned a lot about it, and you still respect and admire and experience that magic you talked about. Do all marine biologists follow your same course, or are some more, I don't know what the word would be, less emotional about the sea? They just look at the practical aspects of it. Because to me, it seems like the ocean is magic to begin with.
Yes, I think if you know the ocean, you couldn't help but fall in love with it. It's such a beautiful place with so many colors, and the colors keep changing. It's almost as if it's alive because it's mm-hmm. moving. And it has that salty consistency.
There's no static at all in terms of the ocean, either at the edge or even on the, as you talked about, the baseline of the ocean. It moves. It's always in motion in some way.
That's right.
How do you apply your environmental aspect to this? What I mean by your environmental aspect is looking at what you know as the ocean and the creatures in the ocean. That we clearly want to protect the ocean as much as possible. In the modern world, there's so much quote-unquote dumping, there's so much debris, and there's also just things that happen because of humans on the ocean. You can't prohibit humans from being on the ocean. Are there any practical steps that people can take to kind of look after the ocean in their own small way?
Oh, yes, most definitely. I think the most important thing is to set up some marine sanctuaries. In my website, I list the main dangers to the ocean, which are climate change, pollution, overfishing, and deep sea mining. I also list practical solutions to all these things. Climate change affects the ocean because it warms the water, and most of the creatures in the ocean are too sensitive to temperature to be able to handle a change of several degrees. And the acidity of the ocean is altered by the dissolving of carbon dioxide into the seawater, and that affects organisms very badly, especially on coral reefs. You see, the Great Barrier Reef in Australia is in the process of being bleached because of man-made, human-made factors.
Do you think, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future of the ocean based on your own knowledge? And you mentioned on your website, sallyannhunter.com, that you have solutions for approaching these issues. Are you optimistic or cautiously optimistic or pessimistic?
Cautiously optimistic, I would say. Because of the poetry of the ocean, people fall in love with it. They don't always know what they can do to help. But if they read my book and look on my website, The more they know about it, the more they will love it and they will want to protect it. One of the things they can do to protect it is preventing litter from getting in the creeks or the rivers, because that will take it to the ocean. And plastic is very bad in the ocean. It kills a lot of sea creatures in very torturous ways. Now, I have seen with my own eyes a bird taking rubbish out of rubbish bins so he can get to the food in there. And all that litter scatters around and the wind comes and blows it, or the rain comes and washes it into the nearby creek and therefore through to the ocean. And so not only should we be careful of our litter and put it in a bin, I think it's even better to take your litter home with you to a secure rubbish bin where birds and animals can't get at it. You need to have a wire grid over the top or some kind of very secure lid that can't be opened by a bird or an animal.
Well, I think municipalities can certainly design trash cans in parks and in public areas so that there is a lid instead of leaving it open and just people in there. But I want to get back to your book, Transfigured Sea. When you decided to write it and you had these two characters, how did you balance your love of the sea with the two characters? Meaning, did they take the forefront of the book, or did the sea take the forefront of the book, or was it more of a balance between the two characters and the ocean?
Well, yes, a balance, because the style of writing that I use is called nature writing, and that is a system that gives as much importance to the natural environment as to any other major character in the book. So around about 50% of the book is about sea creatures and qualities of the ocean. And the other 50% is about the women, the nereids, which are sea nymphs, the conch shell, which is magical, and they interact quite a lot.
Given your background and your love of the sea, do you eat seafood, or are you more of a vegetarian, or would eat anything but sea creatures or fish?
The last thing I would want to eat is baby octopus. I saw them for sale in my local fish shop. It's a very good fish shop. I love it. But to sell baby octopus when I've just been reading about them and how intelligent they are.
Yeah, very intelligent. And,
yes, and such lovely creatures. And to take their young away from them because of some nice flavour they may have, which I'm sure you could get from something else. You don't have to retrieve these babies from their parents.
But you're okay eating other seafood, though, even given your background?
Well, I'm vegetarian, but okay. I do eat a bit of fish.
So you're a pescatarian in a way, too?
That's right.
Okay.
And, overfishing is a major problem. It's the main problem facing the ocean, even more than climate change. But I think if you only eat a couple of small serves of fish per week, 4 ounces of fish in each serve, and limit your intake of fish that way, that you won't do too much harm.
Okay, that's practical. Getting back to Transfigured Sea, what would be the one or two things you want people to take away from your book? Even though it's a novel, it's still making points. So what would be one or two things you would like people to get from the book?
Well, I think they will learn about self-development and personal growth. I think they will learn about the sea creatures and learn to love them. And towards the end of the book, there are profound changes which come to the animal, to the women, and also to the environment that they are in at the time. Because the women go to all the ecosystems and they go to Antarctica, and their relationship blossoms in Antarctica, and they think, oh, this is nice, we have reached the end. But it's not the end. They come back and they go to the deep ocean, and they go deep inside their own psyches. And that is the way that transformation comes to them.
Do you think you're going to write a sequel?
I hadn't thought of that. I have written a book of historical fiction, and I'm hoping to write a book about ecosystems on the land in Australia. Mm-hmm. So that would be quite different, really, I think.
What's your writing regime? Do you devote 2 hours a day, or is it more when you feel like writing? How does that work for you?
Well, a bit of both. I do think if you write at the same time every day, you will be more productive. When I was writing Transfigured Sea, to get it finished in the end for a couple of months, I worked 8 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's how I completed it. And I enjoyed that process, really focusing on what I wanted to do. That was good.
So you were in the moment at that point. If you're working that long each day and that many days each week, that's an immersion into definitely writing, and I could see why you would enjoy it. I would imagine you're in a certain level where you're flowing with your subconscious.
Yes.
And you're just writing it. It's much easier than if you're just doing it an hour or two a day, not quite getting into the flow of it at that point.
That's right. Yes.
Well, I think that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been marine biologist Sally Ann Hunter. She's author of Transfigured Sea, which advocates for environmental protection. Her book, written as a novel, is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Sally Ann Hunter, go to sallyannhunter.com, and you can follow her on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and X. And Sally, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been a great pleasure. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.